I'm reading from Matthew 10. Whatever town or village you enter, search there for some worthy person and stay at their house until you leave. As you enter the home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it is not, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome or listen to your words, leave that home or town and shake the dust off your feet. Truly I tell you, it will be more bearable for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have all of you. Several visitors. We're glad that you're with us today and want to invite you to be back with us at any opportunity that you have. Tonight will be small group meetings. And we had great attendance last week for our small groups. And so if you're not a part of one of those groups, please let us know. We'd love to work you in. If you're in one of the small groups and you're looking around and you're not sure if somebody's in a group, ask them to come and be a part of those. We're studying through the book of James. And so it's been a great study. And it's just started. So we'd love for you to be a part of that study with us. And then in our Wednesday night and Sunday morning classes, we're going through the Bible in 3 years. And we're in the book of Exodus. Well, we're parting the Red Sea this week. So come and be a part of that study with us as well. We'd love to have you. We're leaving Athens. We've been in Athens for a pretty good while. Athens is an interesting place. So we're leaving Athens and we're going to Corinth. Going to the city of Corinth, which is also in Greece. When I say we in our study, we're moving from the 17th to the 18th chapter of the history book of Acts. And so we're moving south to Corinth. Corinth is a very different town than Athens. Just like Memphis is a very different town than Nashville. They're different. Same area, but they're very different. Have different personalities. Athens is going to be a place of great learning. All right, it's going to be a place of government and learning and reading and education. And Corinth is going to be a little more blue collar than Athens would be. Because Corinth sets where Greece narrows from the upper kind of the upper area to the lower area, and it narrows there. It's about 50 feet across, and there's actually a canal that runs through Corinth now where ships can go from one side to the other. But what was very common was for ships coming from Spain and Italy and that area to come to Greece, and then they would move the shipment across the Greek Isles and load them on ships to go on into the Mediterranean over toward Israel and maybe even North Africa and those areas. So it's a shipping place, and so it's going to have a wide variety of personalities and influences just because it's a port city. Port cities are going to be a little different than inland cities, right? They just are. They have a different influence. And so that's kind of where Corinth is. Corinth has a large healing cult in it, a large healing cult in Corinth. And so it was a cult where you would bring to the temple small figures, if you will, of whatever was ailing you. So if you had a bad leg, you'd bring a leg and bring it to this temple. And there would be prayer over that, and it was supposed to bring healing. So that was a large influence in Corinth. And then, again, just trade and sailors and lots of hustle and bustle and an international flavor to Corinth. And that's where Paul has moved to, and he's going to stay about 18 months in Corinth. And then we have two very significant letters that we have that Paul writes back to the Corinthian church. And we're going to realize that the Corinthian church is going to have lots of issues. And so we read the Corinthian letter, we can learn a lot about how to conduct ourselves from Paul's discussion with Corinth and all the struggles that they're having. But Paul comes to Corinth, and he's going to go first to a synagogue. So let's read from the 18th chapter of Acts. After this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. There he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. We'll stop there for a minute. Isn't it interesting, in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, and in the 20th century, the Jews have been driven out, moved around, and persecuted. I mean, it's just an interesting, you know, significantly, as we know, in World War II, by the Nazi regime, and they had kind of been scattered across Europe prior to that. And we know in Egypt they're slaves. We know at the time of Esther they're under persecution, just because their customs were different. The way they conducted themselves was different. Their worship of God made them different because it was different than the culture around them, and they certainly were not into the worship of pharaohs and kings and Caesars. So it made them a different group. But now the Jews have been cast out of Italy. And so Aquila and Priscilla come to Corinth, which is just across the sea. It's not the Aegean. What's on the other side? The Aegean is between Greece and Turkey. No, the Adriatic. Close. Good try back there. You got your smart glasses on. But the Adriatic Sea, right across the Adriatic Sea. Sorry I didn't remember that, but across the Adriatic. And so they come into Greece. And so Aquila and Priscilla are names that might be familiar to you. Paul went to see them, and because he was a tent maker as they were, he stayed and worked with them. So they're tent makers, and Paul's a tent maker. Now, often we'll talk about folks who are in bivocational ministry. We'll ask, what's your tent making job? What's your tent making job? Because what Paul does is Paul works to making tents to support himself. So he's not supporting himself off the ministry. He's supporting himself by doing other things, at least for part of the time. And so he is making tents with Aquila and Priscilla, and they're selling tents and mending tents and whatever tent makers do, making clothes for big guys. I don't know what all they do. And then he is in ministry, I'm sure in the evenings, or maybe in the middle of the day when they took what we'd call a siesta. And then on the Sabbath, for sure. We're going to find out where he is on the Sabbath. Every Sabbath, he reasoned in the synagogue, trying to persuade Jews and Greeks. So he goes to the synagogue, because again, we know Jews were in Italy because they got cast out, right? There still remains, archaeological remains, of a Jewish synagogue in Corinth that you can see today. So there's a Jewish synagogue in Corinth. And so Paul, who we think of almost exclusively as the apostle to the Gentiles, his first stop in Corinth is go to the Jewish synagogue. So he's reasoning with Jews and with Greeks, with Gentiles, telling them about God. Telling them about God. And what's the response going to be from the synagogue? When Silas and Timothy came from Macedonia, which is further north, Paul devoted himself exclusively to preaching, testifying to the Jews that Jesus was Messiah. Let's stop right there and talk about it. He was tent making, and then when Paul and Silas stopped by, he quit tent making and went completely to preaching. What happened? Paul and Silas were probably working some, and they probably brought gifts from the Macedonians that they used to support the ministry. Okay? So, you know, he had his bills paid, so somebody else is there to help, so he devotes himself more to the preaching. So, it's important. There are times when we support ourselves and do ministry kind of as a sideline thing. Right? Or in our time when we're not working, and Paul does that. And then there are times when he devotes himself almost full time to ministry, to teaching and preaching and doing those things. And so when he has support from others, and we'll see that there are gifts that are brought to Paul, then he is able to devote himself to preaching and teaching. Now, I just want to take a minute on this, and not an extremely large time to think about this, but it's important even in ministry, whether we do that in a more formal role or a more informal role, that we decide what we're going to do and kind of organize a little bit our time on how we're going to do that. Now, why I say that is because there's more to do than you can get done. There's more to do than you can get done. And for most of us in life, there's more to do than we can get done, right? So you got to decide, am I going to watch the ball game? Or am I going to go work out? Or am I going to clean the house? Or am I going to take a nap? Or, you know, am I going to go visit somebody in the hospital? Or am I going to work on the plumbing? I mean, I can go on with the list. So you have to decide which of those that you're going to get done. Well, ministry is the same way, and we see that through Scripture. Because why were there deacons appointed in Jerusalem to take care of the widows? Well, there's a dispute about it. We understand. But the apostles said, appoint for yourselves some men to do this because we're going to devote ourselves to teaching and to prayer. Not that caring for these widows is not important. Caring for the poor and those in need is really important. And that's what Peter and James are going to say to the Apostle Paul. As they talk about what are you going to do in your Gentile ministry, don't forget the poor. But the apostle said, our role is about teaching and prayer because they're important. We need to spend time in prayer. And some of us, that's our gift, to spend time in prayer. And probably most of us find it more natural to be busy than to be in prayer. Is that fair? You don't have to, but for most of us, we're probably more geared toward activity than we are to being still and praying. And I fall into that category. I'll just admit that. But the apostles realized that there was a role, and it was an important role, for teaching and prayer. Yes, somebody's got to go out and take in the widows. Somebody's got to do the food baskets. Somebody's got to do the Meals on Wheels. Somebody's got to distribute the food. Somebody's got to keep the bills paid. But our role is going to be teaching and prayer. And so someone else is going to do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Somebody has to do that. And, you know, if you are a get up and work and make it happen all the time, sometimes you can look at a person who studies and prays and say, whew, they're pretty lazy. They're pretty lazy. But for others, that's work that you devote yourself to that's very important, isn't it? And so each of us has to find our role. So Paul is tent making because he needed to do that. One, to support himself, and number two, he felt it was really important, and we're going to see this in letters he writes, that people understood that his ministry was out of a pureness of heart, that he wasn't like some people who taught, and it might be in a Jewish setting, it might be in the Christian setting, or it might be in an intellectual setting, who taught just to make a living, which is nothing wrong with that. But he wanted them to know that his teaching, his dedication to God, was not about him getting financial support, but it was about a sincerity of serving God and being concerned about them. And so he sets himself then to teaching when others come who bring support, who are able to support him, and he devotes more of his time to teaching. And so each of us has to decide what in our lives, what's our role? What are we going to do? What place does God want us to be in? And part of that I would kind of change my conversation about is opening ourselves to what God would have us do. Because very often, what do we want to do? We want to do it, ask God to bless it. When probably we ought to back up and say, God, what do you want me to do? Now bless me in doing that. Opening ourselves to what God wants us to do. Because each of us has different gifts. But Paul, the apostles were using their gifts as God had given them to them. But some of it's action, more out doing a work type environment, and some of it is more of a study and teaching and prayer, because we know prayer is an important thing. The apostle said, we're going to devote ourselves to prayer. Here's something that's interesting. Jesus, who has a very short ministry, right? About a three-year ministry. He is the Messiah. He's God in the flesh. He is actually here to save the world. Right? Nobody has ever had a more important role in the world than Jesus. But Jesus often separated himself and took time to pray. And you think, hey, I've just got 3 years. I got to be snatching and grabbing every day. That would be my attitude. Would it be yours? I'd be so frustrated, trying to get everything organized and done. But Jesus takes 40 days to fast and prayer before the temptation. 40 days. Over a tenth of a year. Fasting and praying. And Jesus sometimes will take him, remember, he'll push out into the sea and go to the other side to get away from the crowds. He's got to have some rest, right? Even Jesus took time to rest and took time to pray. Thought it was important. Jesus prayed continually. But in a formal setting, Jesus prayed. And that's important. And so Paul adjusts again as he can to do those things that are important. All right. So Jesus is, he's in the synagogue and he's teaching. And this is for a Jewish audience. The question is not about Jehovah God, that he is the creator, right? That he is creator, that he's delivered Israel. All the things we're studying in the Old Testament is unquestioned by them. And that a Messiah is coming is unquestioned by them. But there's a lot of doubt and a lot of question, is Jesus the Messiah? Because Jesus doesn't fit the image of Messiah that they have been taught and they have traditionally had. Okay? And so Paul's teaching to them is that Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah, the anointed one. But when they, who are they? People of the synagogue, right? Where he is talking to the folks who said, we got to go back to who we're talking about. Folks in the synagogue, when they began to oppose Paul, and they became abusive. They became abusive because they disagreed. And so, hey, and they're disagreeing about something that is politically and religiously extremely important. And we need to understand that. Because for them, this is really a mixing of politics and religion. Two of the three things you don't ever talk about in polite company, right? I mean, we're taught as young people, as guys, I don't know about girls, but guys, you don't talk about religion, politics, or women. Three things you just don't talk about. That's, you know, it's just the fact. And so, because what? That stirs us deeply. So these people stir deeply because if you disagree with Paul that Jesus is not the Messiah, that makes Paul a heretic. Makes Paul a heretic. That Paul is teaching false doctrine. He's giving false instruction. And so we got to realize that because you can get mad at the Jews. Well, they should, except that they should have known. But their reaction when they didn't is not, should not be a surprise to us. Should not be a surprise to us. And so they became abusive to Paul. He shook out his clothes in protest and said to them, your blood be on your own heads. I am innocent of it. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles. Figuratively, he shakes out his clothes. He shakes the dust off his feet. He's saying, I'm washing my hands of you. I want to talk about this for a minute. That's why Carl read from Matthew 18 when Jesus first sends out the apostles. Or from Matthew 10. When Jesus first sends out the apostles, he says to them, don't take extra provision. Don't take extra food and clothes and money. Because wherever you go, they should support you. Now, this is a whole different attitude than Paul has here, isn't it? when Jesus sends them out to the Jews because a teacher is worthy of his hire. Okay? That was the thought, that if someone's teaching you, you're obligated to take care of them financially. Okay? So you go, and you go to a house, you go to a city. If the house is worthy, you go in and stay with them. And they'll feed you and take care of you, and you teach them. If they don't, if that house doesn't accept you and what you're teaching, shake the dust off your feet. Or if the city doesn't accept it, shake the dust off your feet. It is symbolism of you're washing your hands. You have done what you can do for them. You have taught them the truth. Now, what does this tell us? Two things that I want us to think about for a second. One, all of us, by being here today and in a limited way, are exposed to Jesus. That most of us are literate. I would dare say all of us who are adults are literate, which is a wonderful thing. So we have the opportunity to hear the Word of God as given to us by the Spirit, to be prayerful and to seek God. And as we studied in Acts 17, we're not going to leave it completely because it's just too good. Find God, find Him, because He's not far from any of us, right? And so you and I have an opportunity and a responsibility to seek God. You and I have an opportunity and a responsibility to seek God. Who is going to be filled? The one who hungers. Whose thirst is going to be quenched? The one who's thirsty for righteousness, right? Who's going to have that righteousness in them? The one who's hungry and thirsty. Hungry and thirsty. Talking about Greece, I've shared this illustration with you before, but it's the time I was the thirstiest in my life was on the Greek island of Santorini. And I was thirsty because it's a volcanic island. It's black, ash. It's beautiful, but it's black and it's hot. And you can imagine that heat coming up off that black. And man, I just didn't have enough water. And I was walking around the beach, and I was, and there's not a Circle K or a Tiger Mart everywhere you go. But there are people in like what our garages, they would just have a curtain and they would have a little cooler with water and some refreshments just in their home. But I mean, there's no big signs. There's no golden arches, you know, shining at you. So I'm walking along the beach and around the streets of these houses trying to find water because I am hurting. I'm thirsty. I'm hot and I'm thirsty and I'm looking for water. And I found a bottle in this bar. It's about that tall, you know. And I don't remember what it cost, and I didn't care. I didn't care. I'd have bought that water pretty much for whatever it cost. Because I was thirsty. How was the point of hurting? The reason I say that is, are we that way about seeking God? Are we so thirsty for righteousness and for God that no matter what the cost, we're seeking it? Because Jesus says that's who will be filled. Those who are hungry and thirsty for righteousness. We have an obligation. It's our responsibility to seek God. He's not far from us. But who will the door be open to? This is the one who knocks, right? The door will be open. Sometimes what do we want? We want God to mug us and drag us in. Right? And sometimes as Christians, we want to mug people and bring them in. Almost at any cost, we want to get them in. And that's noble. But it's not biblical. It's not biblical. It's not biblical. We're to be salt and light, right? Salt adds flavor. Makes you thirsty. If you don't think salt makes you thirsty, we missed Kittrell breakfast yesterday. But in another month, we'll have another Kittrell ham breakfast. You come go eat ham with me and then let's work a little while. I'll hold that water. It won't be long till you'll be thirsting. Our job is to bring a good flavor, a good savor, to make folks thirsty, to show them a light, so when they recognize the darkness, they see the light to come out of. But it's not our role to mug people. It's not our role to chain them, to handcuff them to faith, handcuff them to the building. And that's difficult, because when we love people and we realize the value of salvation, man, we want people to have it. And so we should have that fire to share it. We should have that fire to share it. But also understand, just like you and I have a responsibility to seek God. It's not the elder's job to make you seek God. It's not my job. It's our job to make sure you're fed. But you have to want to eat. You won't have to take it. And so it's our job as Christians to be light to the world around us, to share the message. But understand, people have a responsibility. And here's what Jesus says. And here's what Paul does. For those who didn't accept it, what's he do? He said, the blood's on your head. You have rejected, so now you're responsible. If I hadn't taught you, I bear responsibility. That's a little scary too, isn't it, for Christians? If we don't share the Word of God, we bear responsibility. But our role is to teach, to share, and then respect everybody's right to make a decision about Jesus. But when we decide not to seek Him, then we have to be willing to accept the consequences of that. You don't buy homeowners insurance. You decide, I don't want to pay for homeowners insurance. There's not that many fires. I know there are tornadoes, but the chances, I'm going to take my chances. You know, my house has been standing 150 years without a tornado hitting it. So, you know, if it's made 150 years, it'll make it the next 2, 5, 7, 10, 20 that I might need it. So I don't buy homeowners insurance. Decide I don't want to pay for it. I'm going to do something else with it. Something more fun. Because almost anything is more fun than buying insurance. But then the tornado comes through and wipes out my house. Am I going to call Farm Bureau and chew them out because they're not going to write me a check for my house? Or State Farm? Or the Good Hands people? Or Liberty Bibbity? I didn't contract with them. I didn't take the insurance. That's my fault, right? Now I'm going to come crying to all of y'all to help me. That's what we do, right? But I made a decision. And what the Bible teaches us, when the kingdom passes us by, everybody gets to make a decision. And guess what? The decision I make about the kingdom is a decision that I'll answer for. Can anybody answer that for me? I'll answer for it. And when we teach others, we should teach them out of love, not out of obligation. Well, I've done my obligation, Jay. I taught you. Got to move on. But also, there are others in darkness that we need to shed the light to. And so, unlike an evacuation to hurricane, where you might get forced out, Jesus doesn't force us out, does he? He says, hey, here's the kingdom. Here's peace and comfort and salvation. But you choose. But if you choose not to come along and the hurricane drowns you, that's your responsibility. And so, as Christians, our role is, because what did Paul do? Paul said, I'm going somewhere else. I have reasoned with you. I have taught you. I have presented the kingdom to you. And now I will move on. Now I will move on. Now, does that mean God was through with them? No. Because we're going to see some of them came later to Paul and confessed their faith and were baptized. And hopefully many of them. But at that time, Paul said, I've given you, the opportunity is yours. Now, I'm going to finish with this. He said, on the day of judgment, it'll be better for Sodom and Gomorrah than it is for them. I don't assume everybody in here knows what the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. few years ago, I would assume we all know, but we probably don't all know. Sodom and Gomorrah were two cities down on the plains in the time of Abraham. And Abraham and Lot, who was his nephew, have to divide because they have become so prosperous that staying together, they're getting in each other's way and their servants are fighting and it's just not working. And so Abraham, in an uncustomary, unselfish, God-trusted way, tells Lot to choose. And Lot chooses the beautiful valley where Sodom and Gomorrah are. And, oh, Lot, he pitches his tent towards Sodom, and then pretty soon he just moves in. And I'm going to tell you what's going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. They are just corrupt. They're corrupt. And they're perverted. To the point that the men in the city of Sodom, when the two angels come into Sodom to tell Lot, you need to get out. They tell Lot, hey, bring your men out here. We want to have an inappropriate relationship with them. And this is how twisted they have become. Lot says, I'll send out my virgin daughters. Oh, no, we want the boys. That's what's going on. You need to know what's happening. I mean, they're wild. They're ready to knock the doors down. That's how engrossed they are in their sin. That it's not just, hey, those are some good-looking guys. It's like, send them out before we huff and puff and blow your house down. I'm being a little lighthearted in a very serious way, but I want you to realize it's extreme. Okay? It's extreme. And so what does God do? He destroys the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah with brimstone and fire. He destroys them. Because the people aren't, there isn't anybody righteous there. It wasn't that some of them, it's just the whole cities had gone bad. Right? The whole cities had gone bad. Those cities now, even for non-Bible scholars in our society, probably a little different today, but in our history from Sodom's time, if you mention Sodom and Gomorrah, people understood you were talking about evil and wickedness. I mean, they become synonymous with evil and wickedness. And here's what Paul says to the people who rejected the Messiahship of Jesus. He didn't say they were morally awful. He didn't say they were perverted, that they were evil. They had just rejected the Messiah, the Son of God. And he says, on the day of judgment, it'll be better for Sodom and Gomorrah than for them. Or Jesus says that. Excuse me, it's not Paul, it's Jesus in the Matthew passage. That's amazing, isn't it? That's amazing. So, the kingdom is presenting itself to us. Are we going to become a part? Because it is the only really important thing. And as Christians, it's important that we share the kingdom. That we spread the news of the Messiahship of Jesus. That forgives sins. But also realize that our role is to plant and water. It's God to give the increase. And so we don't mug folks. We just love folks. And we share folks. Share with folks about Jesus and about the kingdom. That's what Paul's about doing. And I find it very tough. The accepting the kingdom is probably not as tough for most of us, but the not wanting to, the accepting that sometimes after you teach that you've done all you can do is painful. But we ought to be prayerful for people who are lost. We ought to be prayerful. We probably do way too much mugging and way too little praying about people who are not part of the kingdom. Because the Spirit moves in the lives of people. And we need to be prayerful that God's Spirit moves among us and among those with whom we have an opportunity to share the good news of the kingdom. The kingdom is passing by. The kingdom's at hand. Each of us has an opportunity to knock and let the Lord open the door or we have an opportunity to say, either I don't believe it or it's not important to me. But each of us will give an account with what we do with Jesus. If you need to come, do that while we stand and sing.